Welcome to our discussion of hybrid securities, preferred stocks, convertible securities, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stock. And what we're going to find is it's important for us to know that they exist, especially when somebody comes up to us and says, well, don't I want preferred stock more than just common stock? But the reality is, for the vast majority of us, they're really not the best choices, and we're going to see why in a bit. So let's start on slide number 2 with preferred stock. What are preferred stock? Well, they have a prior claim ahead of common stocks on the income and the assets of the issuing firm. So they're in between common stocks, who are at the end of the line, and bonds, who are at the beginning of the line. We said that they're called hybrid securities. Some people call them fixed income stocks. Some people refer to them as bonds. Ah, they're basically just bonds. Well, they're not bonds, folks. They are stocks. There's no guarantee that you're going to get your income. But the reason they call them preferred is because they have a prior claim. The dividends for preferred stock are usually paid, are almost always paid, before the common stock. And they typically pay a fixed dividend, kind of like a bond. Remember, bonds are fixed. They will say there's a percentage of par. We're going to pay 5% or 7%. Well, on what? Well, they set a par value of maybe $100. So that means we're going to pay, you know, $5 a year. They represent equity, so they don't count as debt on the corporate balance sheet. And as we said, they have a priority over common stockholders, but are subordinate. They're behind the bondholders. What are the advantages? Well, typically, preferred stock have a highly predictable income stream. It's not guaranteed. Remember, dividends are not required. They are optional. But most preferred stock have an excellent record of meeting dividend payments. Now, here's the reason why most of us are just not really that interested in them. If you're a corporation, there are significant tax benefits. Now, I don't exactly remember what they are. You'll have to remember them if you take the Series 7. But I think you get to either only pay taxes on the first 65% of your dividends, or maybe 65% are excluded. Whatever it is, it makes them much more advantageous to corporations. Hence, they will pay higher rates for them than an individual investor who has to pay taxes on the entire dividend amount. Of course, if you put them in a Roth IRA or other tax-qualified account, that doesn't really matter. But still, this is the idea. They're really mostly for other corporations. What are the disadvantages? Well, like bonds, they're susceptible to inflation. And like stocks, the dividends can be suspended or postponed. So remember at the beginning of the semester, we said about these hybrid securities that they give you the best and the worst of both worlds. They typically lack substantial capital gain potential, like bonds, and they don't normally pay as well as bonds. So there's a lot not to like about these things, other than the predictable income stream. Here are the rates of high-grade corporate bond yields and high-grade preferred stock yields. And we see through the years that typically bonds pay more than preferred stock. What is the yield calculation? Well, it's the same as the yield calculation we did on our bond and the same calculation we did on our stock. We take the annual dividend income and divide it by whatever the current market price is. So if this preferred stock were paying us $2 a year and the market price was $27.50, we'd take $2 divided by $27.50 and that would give us 7.27%, which is quite substantial. But remember, there's not a whole lot of opportunity for capital appreciation, which is what we're looking for in common stock. And those dividends can be stopped, unlike a bond, which is where the interest payments are mandatory. The best of both worlds, the worst of both worlds. As with bonds, the prices fluctuate mostly inversely to interest rate. Although there is a greater risk of non-payment of dividends, remember, dividends are not mandatory, whereas if the bond issuer stops paying the interest payments, they're hauled off to bankruptcy court. And so, if we were to come up with a price, we'd say, okay, what is the dividend income? Well, let's divide it by whatever the prevailing interest rate is. And let's say it's 12%, which you have to go back to the 1990s for that, 1980s. And you see that this price would be $20.83. Very rarely works that way. But that's our calculation for a preferred price stock. Now, what are some of the characteristics of preferred stock? Well, we're going to see that some preferred stock is convertible preferred, or convertibles. And so we'll discuss convertibles in more detail in a little bit later when we get to convertible securities, including convertible bonds. So that allows a holder of the preferred stock to convert to a specified number of shares of the issuer's common stock. So in other words, if this is preferred convertible stock, convertible preferred stock, and the common stock goes wild, does really, really well, we then can convert our preferred into common stock. But you can't go back. Once you've done that, now you have the common stock, which, is more volatile, doesn't necessarily pay very good dividends. So you've made that decision. And we'll discuss convertibles in a bit. There's adjustable rate preferred, sometimes called floaters, and dividends are adjusted periodically in line with whatever prevailing interest rates or treasury rates or some other interest rate index. So in other words, we said that preferred were fixed in that they paid a set amount, but there are preferreds that can float, that can change their interest rate based on what's going on in the marketplace for interest rates. Senior preferred, junior preferred, same thing we saw in the bond world, sometimes called prior preferred. These are stock preferred stock that have priority over the junior preferred. So there's that pecking order, and make sure you understand which one you're buying when you look at the company's offerings. Now, this is something important to remember on slide number 8. Cumulative versus non-cumulative preferred. Remember that dividends are optional. They can be skipped. But if a preferred stock is cumulative preferred, what does that mean? That means, hey, look, you didn't pay me my dividends this year. And next year, maybe things get better and you're going to pay the dividends again. You have to pay me the ones you did not pay me first before you pay anybody else anything else. So you have to go back and pay those foregone dividends, which are said to be in arrears. Does that make any sense? In other words, one year they skipped the dividend payments. Great. I bought this preferred because I'm looking for reliable payments of dividends. So the company gets back on its feet and they want to start paying dividends again. They have to go back and pay the dividends that were not paid the prior years before they can go forward. So obviously, cumulative preferred is more desirable than non-cumulative preferred. And lastly, let's take a look at callable versus non-callable preferred. Well, the same idea as when we discuss bonds. As with bonds, some preferred stocks can be called away from you. So if interest rates fall, the issuer wants to refinance the preferred stock at a lower dividend rate. So which one's more desirable? As with bonds, non-callable preferred is more desirable than callable. And there are some preferred stocks called participating that allow the investors to participate in earnings, or sometimes if there's a sale of assets, beyond the stated dividend rate. So again, that would be more of an attractive option for preferred stock buyers, because if things go really, really well, you're going to get more than just what you were told at the beginning. So what's the bottom line on preferred stock? It is normally owned by corporations. Some individual investors may acquire a taste for them, but it is my opinion you are better off with common stock for growth and income and bonds for income. Why buy something that has the advantages of both and the disadvantages of both when you could concentrate on buying the individual securities, the stocks, and the bonds, and just deal with the issues that stocks have and deal with the issues that bonds have? Make sense? You know, I've really never dealt with these things personally. I've never bought any. I know one gentleman a long time ago who had a mutual fund that invested in preferred and hybrid securities, and he wasn't that excited about it. In fact, he was going to sell it the last time I talked to him. And then I knew one client, he wasn't my client, at the brokerage firm where I first worked, that was a big fan of preferred stock, but he just loved dividends. This guy just loved the dividends. So there you go. Think about it. Think about it. Okay. Slide number 16. Now let us turn our attention to convertible securities. So there are convertible preferred stock and convertible bonds. Both of those can be converted into common stock. So these are fixed income obligations that can be converted into a specified number of shares of the issuer's company's common stock. So there are both convertible bonds and convertible preferred stock. We'll discuss these in the context of bonds, but the same thing is true for everything we say with regard to convertible preferred stock. They're sometimes called deferred equity, or an equity kicker, a sweetener. It's the ability, as we just said, previously, to share in the possible appreciation of common stock. So if the common stock were to do very, very well, it might behoove us, it might be advantageous to us to convert our bonds or preferred stock into common stock. So let's say we had a $1,000 convertible bond. In the provisions of the bond, there will be the ability to convert that, usually after a certain amount of time, maybe immediately, into 20 shares of stock or 30 shares of stock. So it'll tell you the conversion ratio. What are some of the conditions on slide number 11? There's the conversion period. It's normally deferred, as we said, for a period of time. You know, you got to wait 5 years. You got to wait 10 years before it can happen. There's the conversion ratio that we mentioned, the number of shares of common stock into which a convertible security can be converted. We made the example of 20 shares. You have $1,000 bond, you could convert that to 20 shares of stock. So there is a conversion price. There's a price per share at which the common stock will be delivered to the investor. So think about it. If you have a $1,000 bond and you get 20 shares for each bond, that means the conversion price would be $50. Anything less than that, and it really doesn't make sense for you to convert your shares, your bonds into shares, does it? If it were more than that, we might be tempted to convert our bonds into stock. However, once we've converted the bonds into stock, You can't go back. Remember that. What's the conversion value? That's the indication of what a convertible issue would trade for if it were priced to sell on the basis of its stock value. So that's a very simple calculation. The conversion value is equal to the conversion ratio times the market price. So we have a bond that we are allowed to convert to 20 shares. But what if the stock price were $60? That means the value of our bond is really $1,200, because we could get 20 shares selling for $60 a share, and that would mean we would get $1,200. But guess what? The convertible bond will probably sell for more than $1,200 because of the ability to convert to the stock, plus the fact that the bond is still earning interest. Do you think somebody's going to sell their bond that's worth $1,200 in this as stock, even though it's still paying interest? No, they're going to want a premium. And that's what's on slide 13. The conversion premium is the amount by which the market price of a convertible security exceeds its conversion value. So in our example, if that bond that were able to be converted for 20 shares, with a stock trading at $60, we're selling for $1,400. Our conversion value is $1,200, but because the bond holders say, well, I'm not selling it for $1,200, I want you to pay me $1,400. So that would be the conversion premium. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Yes. Do these calculations on the worksheet a few times, and you'll say, I can handle this. Now, what's the conversion equivalent? This is the price at which the common stock would have to sell in order to make the convertible security worth its present price. The conversion parity. You take the market price of the convertible and divide it by the conversion rate. So continuing with our example, we have a bond that's allowed to be converted for 20 shares, selling for $1,400. That would mean we would need a price of $70 for it to be equivalent. But if the market price were $60, it's not near the conversion equivalent because of the convertible securities conversion premium. So here is a graph that tries to show you what happens with these things. The green value is saying, look, it's a bond. And if it's sold just as a bond, that's how much it's going to be worth. But if the stock price were doing really, really well, well above the conversion value, then our price of our bond would follow the stock and be a little bit more because of the conversion premium. But what if the stock tanked? What if the stock went into the toilet, excuse my French, the porcelain oasis, the organic matter hit the ventilating device, whatever, and the stock price fell precipitously. Well, remember, it's still a bond. So this graph is trying to show you, say, even if that stock falls dramatically, our bond will still hold its value because it's still paying interest, and the company is still on the hook to pay us back when the bond matures. This assumes that the stock, the company, is not in danger of going into default, in which case the bond price would also fall precipitously, as we saw when we discussed bonds. So, slide 16. What's the bottom line on convertibles? Well, they allow you to partake in the potential capital appreciation of the common stock with less risk because of the income from the convertible bond or the convertible preferred stock. If the stock price is below the conversion price, then the securities price will be kept up because of its value from producing income, whether it's a bond or preferred stock, as we saw on the previous slide. But you pay for that reduced risk via the conversion premium. And I know I've gone through this fairly quickly. I apologize if it seems too fast. Just watch it over again, listen to it over again. But realize, it is my personal opinion, I believe individual retail investors are simply best served by focusing their attention on common stocks for growth and income, and bonds, regular bonds for income. But you know, there are always exceptions, and some of you might find that you love to dabble in these things. We wish you, as always, the best of luck and success. And keep in touch, because I don't know anybody who does these things. I'd like to know more what their experiences are. I don't have any plans on buying any anytime soon. Slide 17, and that is our discussion of hybrid securities, preferred stocks, convertible bonds, convertible preferred. So, dear students, you are in for a treat, because in our next presentation, we're going to go back to the very beginning of the class and tie everything together in diversification and risky asset allocation. Oh boy, think of how far you've come. You are awesome, rising investment gurus. We are so, so proud of you.